8:32 the time, 28 minutes shy of 9 o'clock. And if there's one thing we can all agree on, it's that we love planting things here in this town. I've gotten a lot of response from the listeners as far as the kind of trees you have, mostly citrus. We'll talk about that and a bunch of other stuff. But let's talk about Thursday, the Arbor Day event happening at Moulton Meadows Park. We have with us the city arborist, always available. If you ever have a question, he's always available to you. And he's available to us now and this morning. We welcome Matthew Barker. Hey, Matthew.
Hi, Ed. How are you?
I'm fantastic this morning. How are you?
I'm doing great. It's a great morning.
I had such a great conversation with you the last time you were here. I thought, well, you know what? Let's just continue that conversation into the stash section of our program this morning. We're going to talk for a while. We'll play some stash together. But welcome. Welcome back.
I'm so happy to be here.
Thank you. It's great to have you here. So tell us, first of all, about the event happening this coming Thursday.
Yeah, it's going to be a great community event. It's in Moulton Meadows Park from 3 to 5 p.m. on Thursday, March 9th, this Thursday, in just a couple days. It's going to be a great community event with lots of exhibitors there, people on hand to give composting demonstrations and some great tree planting and tree care advice, a lot of community groups that work with either preservation or conservation, community gardens. You can really get involved with your local plant people and see if there's any interest that you can interact with them with, and lots of activities for kids, giveaways. We're going to do a native tree planting, a ceremonious native tree planting in Moulton Meadows.
Okay.
It's going to be great.
Okay.
There's going to be some live music courtesy of Tom Joliet and the Four Stringers.
Oh, very cool. We, Tommy J, one of our, we love Tommy J. He's from right here,
yeah,
right here at the radio station.
He lends his voice and musical talent for our enjoyment. So it's going to be a great event.
Excellent. Excellent. We'll look forward to it. We'll see you out there for sure. And you mentioned native trees. What, give us some of the native trees here to Laguna Beach.
Sure. I get this question quite a bit, like what's native, what's not.
Right.
You know, it really is just whatever is native to this area when you, specify a given geographic area. So typically in arboricultural circles or, you know, botany circles, it's usually limited to the state, although sometimes in a state like California, where you have many different climate types or, you know, soil types, mountainous, deserts, valleys, coastal, it can get a little, there can be a little flux in there, right?
Right.
So typically you look for native trees that do well in a drier, you know, coastal environment that can handle some salt spray tolerance.
Right.
You know, the same trees that do well in Laguna Beach might not do so well out in the desert or up in the mountains. So
as I look out my window, I see we have a eucalyptus on one side. And what's that? What's that over your right shoulder? What kind of tree is that over your right shoulder?
It looks like a silver dollar gum.
Okay. Are either of those native?
So eucalyptus is a genus of tree, not a species. And it has about 700 or 800 distinct species within the genus. So a lot of times people ask me about a eucalyptus tree, or would a eucalyptus tree be good to plant here, or what have you.
Right.
But really, it's such a hugely diverse genus. But there, the genus is native to Australia.
Okay. All right. Well, thank you. And we're coming up on the 30th anniversary of fires here in Laguna Beach. There's always questions about they dry out fast. They are tinder, essentially. Is that true?
Well, so I'm an arborist, right? And we have a great, very smart and capable fire department, and they know fire science like nobody else, right? I know arboriculture, and my background is primarily pruning, hazard reduction pruning, you know, because I was a climber for many years on the East Coast.
Right.
So I rely on our fire department heavily when it comes to learning about how wildfire and trees intersect.
Right.
And they come to me when there are questions about, you know, pruning or maintenance of trees. So we collaborate really well.
Right.
I don't even pretend to know, have a thimble of knowledge that they do about fire science.
All right. Okay. So that was a nice way of answering that question, by the way. You should be running for office here real soon. the recent storms that we've had, some trees in other cities, I've seen trees toppling over. And how long after a storm like we had is the ground still moist enough for a tree to topple? How long of a period of time until, okay, our trees are safe from that?
Yeah, so I think after about an inch of rain, you don't have to worry about irrigating any of your gardens for about 72 hours.
Right.
And I think, 3 or 4 days is probably nice for things to dry out, things to subside.
Right.
But I was happy to see, even though with the really severe weather we had, there weren't really too many, too many limb or total tree failures, which was great to see.
Right.
I'd like to say that, since I've been here, I've had some influence on.
Well, you have. I'm not kidding. I've been here a long time. You may be the most influential arborist we've had. And certainly the most involved. And again, I think that's why we get all these great messages about you when they text connect us.
Yeah, it's lighting up like a Christmas tree.
It is pretty cool, yeah. I've been hearing during, and I want you to explain this as an arboriculturist.
Arborist.
Arborist. Well, no, but you're... But
arboriculturally or in an arboriculture manner.
Thank you.
Yeah.
All right. During the city council meetings, there's been... one person who continually talks about some invasive grapefruit vine. Are you familiar with that that question that's asked? And are you familiar with the grapefruit vine?
So I think it's a cucumber vine.
Cucumber vine.
Yeah,
there we go.
And
thank you.
Yeah, no. It's,
glad you're here.
This really ties into the first question that you had about sort of native, and the word invasive gets tossed around quite frequently. So. While it is a native plant, it's endemic to California.
Right.
It can have its plant physiology sometimes will use other plants or trees as a means of stabilization for its own self as it continues to grow.
Right.
But then in the summertime, it flowers, it fruits, it produces seeds, and then in the summer it dies off. So invasive typically means that the plant is not native to an area. And is introduced there through some means and then does market harm to the ecosystem,
right.
Whether it pushes out native plants or it somehow predates them or, limits their ability, the native plant's ability to thrive and spread.
Right.
And then itself starts to spread and replace. That's an invasive plant. And invasiveness can come and go. So an invasive plant can be invasive and then it can be kept under control and then not. The cucumber vine, while it's native to California, it's a native plant. It does use other plants for its, own natural purposes.
Right.
So, yeah.
Okay, so it's like a snake, a boa constrictor climbing a tree, essentially.
Well, yeah, it doesn't really do any harm.
Right.
It covers them. It might shade it out for a while, but it's pretty weak when it comes to the summer heat, and then it just comes back every year.
And is it the one that's easy to pull out for me? Because there's this vine that we had in our it was so easy to pull out from the bushes, and it would come out almost in one piece. You could take out like 30, 40 feet of something.
Yeah, it's pretty loosely attached. Right. It's not one of these vines that grabs on for dear life. Reminds me of Virginia creeper in the east. It'll climb up the trees, but then if you just tug on it a little bit, all of a sudden you got this, like you said, 30 or 40 foot string of vegetation. You're like, man, what am I going to do with this now? then this giant, we're trying to stuff it in the bag.
That's exactly the way it was for me.
Yeah, totally.
So you drove up in a pickup truck and you've got a tree limb in the back. What's going on with that tree limb?
Oh boy. Yeah. It was just a piece of debris that was, the result of, a limb breakage, and it was just stopped over, clean cut. Yeah.
Right, you do that a lot. You'll see something, and you'll like, oh, okay, it's time to. We need to saw this off the tree. Are you still climbing?
No. So my role here with the city is strictly, managing the contractor, West Coast Arborist, that does all our tree care.
Right. Do you wish you were still climbing?
Yeah, I certainly miss it.
Right.
I certainly miss it. It was very liberating and freeing.
Right.
I'm sure the views here in Southern California could be magnificent. I used to climb in Virginia and then be able to see all the way into DC, and you can see the Capitol Dome and the monument. Here, the views are a little bit less architectural,
right.
Just natural splendor.
Right.
So no, I haven't done any climbing recently.
Right. But but I could see you spending hours at the top of a tree just getting the view. You know what? When is Matthew coming down?
Yeah, much to the chagrin of my supervisor. What are you doing up there?
So here, you were starting to say, what's a typical day like for you here?
I interact with our community quite frequently, whether it's answering phones or emails, questions, complaints, concerns, that sort of thing. I meet with people who ask about or are curious about public trees. I get a lot of requests for advice on private trees, and that's something that I wish I could help with, but I'm, you know, I'm the city arborist, so I manage the city's public tree asset.
So if someone comes to you and goes, "Hey man, I have this tree, and
what do I do?
What do I?" You can't. You don't answer that. You can't answer that. How does that work?
Yeah, so I can't really opine or make recommendations on private trees. But what I do as a resource to our community, I point them in the direction of, you know, reputable organizations that can then help direct them, you know, to a tree care professional that's going to. You know, they might need a plant healthcare professional for some pest control. They might need somebody who's specialized in pruning young trees, training young trees, making sure they have proper structure and they're on the right path. Maybe they need help with a big mature tree that needs the aid of a climber. So I can help them, put them in, I can put them in touch with the right people, but I can't tell them exactly, even though I want to say, oh, this is, you need to do A, B, and C, and then you need to do it this way and this way. You know, it's just, I'm a.
I absolutely get it.
But to answer your question, I, you know, interact with the community through various communication methods. I meet with them to discuss public tree concerns. And I do really anything that has to do with plants or trees in a public nature, open space. I manage the open space that we have.
Okay. So one of the public, one of the public tree concerns that I received in a text connect this morning, comes, from Roger and Ellen, and they ask the question, many of us are looking forward to the March 20 to March 23rd, when we understand the city council will review options for improving the Forest Plaza. We think one of its best features is the wonderful tree canopy there. What can you tell us about the tree canopy? Will it be kept intact? Will it be enhanced? What can you tell us?
That's a great question. So whenever there's, you know, going to be a sort of improvements or development, I always advocate for preservation in the general sense, whenever it's feasible, right? Preserving specimen trees, large trees, or trees that are in good condition, whenever it's feasible. That is a very complicated project. It's very complex. A lot of moving parts, a lot of people involved, a lot smarter people than I when it comes to doing work like that. So I certainly have, you know, a voice in the room when it comes to providing insight or guidance about all the trees, some trees, you know, a lot of times construction and trees don't really get along very well, but I can sort of bridge that communication gap because let's be honest, I have a pretty niche knowledge set that not a lot of people have. So, yeah, so I certainly provide insight and guidance, but, that's there's a lot to that project.
Well, thank you.
And I'm pretty, and I'm relatively new to the community, only been here 2 years. And I know that that's been a conversation point for a while.
Well, I appreciate that. Thank you for the honesty in that answer. I appreciate that. So, we've been asking listeners what kind of fruit trees they have, and I've gotten a lot of, certainly a lot of lemons. A lot of lemons grow here, a lot of citrus.
I saw somebody, I was in Bluebird Canyon neighborhood, and somebody had a box, and it just said free lemons, and they had this enormous lemon tree, and all over the tree they had lemons, and I'm like, they're just giving away at this point.
And I see that as well. You see that all over, and mostly with lemons here, so I imagine lemons do really, really well here. Anne-Marie and I have a kumquat tree. That it's just magnificent. By accident it grows because I can normally kill anything that's green, man, really fast. Nothing does well around me. No plant lives or survives, but this kumquat tree is doing really well and thriving. Are there fruit trees that don't do well in this area? I don't notice a lot of apple trees, for instance.
Yeah, that's something that's a little bit more familiar where I come from. I'm, you know, a native New Englander, so apple picking is sort of a rite of passage as a young child. But you know, I don't have. I'll be honest with you. I don't have too much experience with fruit trees.
Okay,
that's really a whole separate. You know, arboriculture is so interesting because it's just a tree, man. You know, what do you mean? But it really is like there's a lot of little silos in arboriculture that you wouldn't think of. Like I mentioned plant healthcare. There are men and women that are professional plant healthcare people. Right. They know every tree disease, every pest, the cure, the concentrate, and that's what they do. But you know, they've never been, you know, in the climbing and pruning right. sort of section.
Right.
And fruit taking for care of fruit trees is another one of those silos. It's a whole different pruning process for pruning for yield and right. Managing, you know, the pounds of fruit per the right. size of your tree. And but anyway, most fruit trees are going to need similar conditions: rich, well-drained soil, plenty of sun, consistent watering, irrigation, right. Not, right. and you know, good soil chemistry. So okay. usually when people ask me about a tree question, I say, have you had the soil tested? Get a soil analysis done.
Right.
That'll, you know, you can treat a symptom above the ground, but if there's a systemic problem in the soil, you're just going to be throwing, you know, good money after bad. So
wonderful advice.
Soil analysis is the number one thing you can do.
You mentioned that there's a citrus pest that has arrived here in Southern California. Can you tell us about that?
Yeah. So in LA County and north of LA County, there's been observed on a minor scale, just a few sightings of a Asian citrus psyllid, I think it is. And it carries Huanglong Bing disease.
Okay.
I don't think that there's any known cure. Efforts, from what I've been discussing with other, you know, Southern California tree people,
right.
has been efforts on control, which have been pretty successful. So,
okay.
You know, there's a lot to learn.
Right.
But yeah, I did. It was in the community newsletter a couple months ago.
Okay.
But yeah,
does so it does
not
it,
too much information?
Does it damage just the fruit, or does it kill the entire tree?
It affects the entire tree, okay. but it typically, you know, works on citrus trees in general.
Right. So you mentioned different silos of expertise, and
yeah.
I was going to ask you to look out the window, look at the tree, and tell me, can you tell, is that a healthy tree just simply by looking at it?
So I get that question a lot.
I'm sure you do.
Is my tree healthy? Why is my tree not healthy? And you know, it's pretty relative, right? A tree can appear to be extremely healthy and vigorous,
right?
Really, you know, the things that you think of: a dense crown of good looking foliage. The leaves are the right size, shape, and color, which right. are the three things that I usually look for. But it can have underlying defects that maybe doesn't affect its health or its vigor, but there's some other issues of concern.
Right.
Because, you know, trees are big and heavy.
Right. Once again, check the soil.
Yeah, exactly. Absolutely. Soil analysis is like the number one thing you can do for the health of your tree. If not necessarily amending the soil, but knowing if there's a deficiency in the soil or something right. like that can solve a lot of problems. So if you're wondering if your tree is healthy, a really quick thing to do is to look at the outermost edges of the crown of the tree. Okay. Not, you know, if you can see the leaves and the foliage are a good size, right. shape, and color, then for the most part, that tells you the tree is able to absorb water and nutrients from the ground, drive them up through the trunk and into the outermost reaches of the crown. Whenever there's a problem, primarily with the root system,
right.
you're going to see that in the outermost edges of the crown and sort of a general pattern of dieback, a dead branch here or there, totally normal. But when you have the whole overall tree
right.
starting to sort of retreat a little bit from
right.
everything happens at the outermost edges when there's a problem.
Beautifully explained.
Thank you.
Thank you for that. And that brings me to the next question of carbon dioxide. And this is just something I was thinking about. I wonder if the lifespan of trees generally has been reduced because of carbon dioxide. We have some trees that have lived for thousands of years. I wonder if generally lifespans for trees, much like humans, can be reduced because of the amount of carbon we're spewing.
Well, it's actually interesting because, you know, trees in general, they take in carbon dioxide through their leaves, combine mm-hmm. that with energy from the sun and water and produce sugar.
Right.
And that's their mojo, man. That's what trees do, right?
Right,
they take in carbon dioxide and they take those carbon chains and put them together using energy from the sun with water being the solution and make these long sugar chains. And that's what they use for energy. But the roots actually, so the crown takes in oxygen and gives oxygen as a byproduct.
Right.
Well, the roots actually need oxygen to survive. And so it's one part of the tree is taking in carbon and giving oxygen, and one part of the tree is taking it in.
So the...
Oh, to answer your question. Yeah.
No, no, that's cool.
It's a common thread when people, not just on a radio show, but anybody who talks to me, I go off on tangents.
No, this is good. This is wonderful.
You know, so there's obviously more carbon dioxide in the atmosphere, which is only kind of a benefit for trees. The more carbon dioxide there is. Now, of course...
So there's no point of an overdose, for instance.
Yeah, I don't think right. So. You know, there, you know, millions and millions of years ago, hundreds of millions of years ago, there was much more carbon in the atmosphere, and you know, trees, when trees dominated the planet. So, to answer your question, there's other factors that are, you know, threatening urban trees and natural forests. So
right.
it's not just because there's an excess of carbon in the atmosphere doesn't mean it's all hunky dory.
And those factors, what's the most concerning factors to you right now?
Well, I think they're pretty well known and pretty general in terms of, so, you know, in urban forestry, trees have a lot of stress factors, right? Not only is it just, you know, a lack of available soil volume, they're surrounded by impervious surface.
Right.
You've got human influence there, whether it's just, you know, whatever is piquing our humans' interest at the time, and right. that usually has effects on trees if there's not a tree care professional to advocate for them.
Right.
But in general, you know, just sort of increased human activity and deforestation are always at the top of the list for natural forests.
And are we recommending? Oh, and let me ask you this question before we go any further here.
Sure.
So we're celebrating our Arbor Day event on March 9th. Am I crazy, or is actual Arbor Day in April?
So I get this question a lot too. So
I'm glad I'm asking questions that you get all the time.
Well, no, but it's great because it gives me a chance to
to elaborate.
Maybe say it once and a lot of people can hear, as opposed to answering it, you know, one-on-one.
Right.
So National Arbor Day, you know, American Arbor Day is celebrated the last Friday in April.
Mm-hmm.
So usually it's around, you know, April 20th to 30th, somewhere in
right.
there.
It's the 28th this year.
Thank
right.
you.
You're welcome.
And then in California, Arbor Day is March 7th.
Right.
Every year it's March 7th.
Okay.
And that's because in the end of April, that's a great time to plant trees for maybe some other states.
Right.
But of course, here in California, we have a little bit of a different climate, especially in Southern California. So it's... Every state has its own Arbor Day based on the best time to plant trees.
Okay.
But National Arbor Day is kind of just, you know, they picked the last Friday in April. So March 7th is the birthday of Luther Burbank.
Right.
He was, much like myself, a native New Englander who moved to California. He was a pioneer in plant genetics and plant genomics, where he made hundreds, if not thousands, of varieties of fruit and vegetables, many of which we still use today. He developed famously the russet potato.
Okay.
Yeah, he actually sold the rights to the russet potato for the modern equivalent of about $3,000 to fund his move to California.
Right. Oh, man, there's not a bigger starch eater in the world than me, and I
sure.
love russet potatoes.
Sure. Yeah. Womp, womp, womp.
Three grand.
$3,000 for wow. the modern. Yeah. So it's, so that, what a story. But you know, but again, so California Arbor Day is, sort of honoring him and the work that he did in, sort of bringing plant genetics, which at the time was seen as this weird, kooky, mad scientist thing, breeding plants and, you know, trying to breed certain characteristics together into really a modern science.
All right. I want you to stick. Are you going to stick around for the personal stash this morning?
Little
intro wars. I want you to jump in on all this stuff here.
Okay. Yeah. Sure. Hey, absolutely.
All right. I want you to hang out. So, this coming Thursday from 3 p.m. to 5 p.m. we'll be at Moulton Meadows Park. You can walk up to Matthew and ask him these same questions over and over again, 1,000 times. He'd be happy to answer them for you.
Always.
And then join in all the festivities. Again, this coming Thursday from 3 to 5 p.m. In just a couple of minutes, we'll be back with Intro Wars.